Good day, nerds, and welcome to a Cantina Conversation with our book reviewer, Megan, and author, Ananda Lima. And Ananda's here to discuss her book, Motherland, which is a poetry collection written by Ananda and really struck a chord with Megan. In this interview, they're going to talk about Ananda's background and her experiences that led to this beautiful piece. So stick around and take a listen.
We're here with Ananda Lima talking about newly released Motherland. It comes out on October 15th. Welcome, welcome. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us today. I just finished Motherland a few days ago, and I really enjoyed it. Some of the pieces really resonated with me. I have two little boys, and you know, like some of it like broke my heart a little bit, but it was just, you know, I definitely connected. And so I'm excited to be able to chat with you today and, you know, give our listeners and our readers a little something extra.
Thank you so much for reading, and thank you for spending the time talking to me. This is great.
Yeah, of course. So let's start off with maybe giving a little, how about you give like a little brief synopsis of Motherland, a summary of what it's about, kind of just to give our readers a little sneak peek or a little, you know, summary so they can follow along with the conversation.
Perfect. So Motherland is a collection of poems that sort of gravitate around two big shifts on sort of how I see myself, which occurred after I was an adult, which is becoming a mother and becoming an immigrant. And I was an immigrant way before I was a mother, but something happened once I became a mother of an American kid, right? This is home for him, that sort of changed my experience of immigration. And I also think that my motherhood is marked by immigration as well. So it goes both ways. So the poems sort of gravitate in this intersection between motherhood and immigration, and they sort of take place in this time where, you know, the past several years where both, I don't know, being an immigrant and being a woman was encountered with a very hostile environment.
Yeah, to say the least.
so the collection gravitates around that. That's right.
Yeah, perfect.
So that is Motherland. And then there are poems that sort of radiate from that. Yeah.
So you have a few published works. You have at least a couple collections of poems, and then you have a little other published works. Like, tell me about your background. Not, you know, I want to hear all about it, all about like your personal and your immigration story and all that, you know, but I also like about your professional and, you know, yourself as a writer.
Perfect. So I'll start with a book. So all my poet friends, they immediately know what is a chapbook and what's a collection. All my non-poet friends, including fiction people, they're like, what, a chapbook? What is that? So I have a few chapbooks, which is very common in the poetry world, and they're not full books. They would be like a little bit like a, not like a single for a musician, but, you know, something smaller than a book, but that is,
okay.
It's a mini book, basically. So I have one chapbook translation, which came out in 2019. That was my first one. It was really lovely, lovely small press. And then a lot of them came later, sort of late 2020, early 2021. They all came all at once.
Okay.
I haven't written them all at once. I've been writing them over several years. You know, when things start getting picked up and you just sort of luck out that way.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Yeah, so I have one come out late 2020 and two come out early 2021 of these mini books, you know. Mm-hmm. And some of them are poetry. Some of them poetry and photography, and I also have a fiction one, which, you know, for fiction is a small book, but for poetry it would be a regular book. It's like 80 pages. Yeah, and there's sort of a little bit more focused in a tight subject matter, and they're sort of, you know, 20 pages or something like that, which can be very fun too.
Sure.
It's more of a close loop. Yeah, sorry. So you're asking about me as a writer, right? So I've been writing for a long time. My friends knew I took like photographs. So I was a photographer for a while before, but I sort of wrote secretly. And finally I started coming out and sending them out. And I went to an MFA program at Rutgers, which was wonderful. And that really helped. The MFA was in fiction, which was really fun. But I ended up writing more poetry than fiction because I guess I like procrastinating. So that's a little bit of my writing background.
So you, because I did look on like your website and looking at stuff and some of the photography that you've done. So where does that fit in into like your creative, you know, identity, like the creative side of you? Like, because would you say that you started with photography first? Did you maybe like you had a passion for both a little bit? Like what kind of made you switch gears? What, you know, how did the photography part of you fit into, you know, your creative life?
I love that question. So I started taking pictures really young. I got a present, like a camera, as a present from a relative in the US. They had like a nice little camera and they didn't want it anymore. And they gave it to me. I was like 10 and it was really great. And, you know, I would just always take pictures of like, you know, family events and things like that. But, you know, as I became like an adult, it became my thing. And it's still, I think it's going to be there sort of forever. But once I started writing, I realized, no, my primary medium is poetry. And I sort of realized that by doing it. So photography, it keeps going. If I'm trying to do photography, the poetry keeps calling and same with fiction. So I think my primary one is poetry. And it took a while to sort of realize that. But before that, I was doing a lot of photography, and there's, I think, some intersections with poetry that I really like. You know, a poem as opposed to sort of like a novel or something can be very small and very contained, right? But it leaves a lot of space. You know, fiction, which is also great, but fiction, you sort of have to take the reader very much more clearly, at least in most fiction, where you want them to go with your words. Poetry, you sort of give them enough and you give them a lot of space. So I think it's a very different experience. And I think photography has a little bit, at least for me, a little bit of this feeling with poetry. You know, you have the photograph and it's kind of self-contained and small. But, you know, if you spend time with it, you can go many places. So there's something intuitively there. Yeah, there's something that feels the same or similar. The other thing is I kind of in my mind, I mean, simplifying, but, you know, I have fiction on one side, photography on the other one, and poetry sort of in the middle, because poetry has this nonverbal component. You know, like in a novel, mostly, you know, there's exceptions, but mostly it's just about the words. It's very verbal. In poetry, you have this most often visual aspect that is sort of playing with the words. So it's not just the words themselves, it's where they sit on the page, where there's space. And these things are not verbal. They're not words, right? They're spaces. So you have this, in my case, visual element that is in tension with or working together with the words. So I feel like poetry is in the middle, and maybe that's why I love the three, but I love poetry.
Yeah, I love how you make that connection, because I definitely noticed that you were playing around with like the layout and the presentation of some of the poems, where I think Fall in particular was just like little droplets, the words were dropping and it would like it just like kind of helps you like tell, like engage the reader and tell, demonstrate your experience, or try to like get them to connect a little bit and just try to give that little bit of extra that goes beyond the words. So I love that you made that connection between the photography, like the visual and the text. Yeah, because poetry is just, there are so many, I feel like there are so many methods and so many ways that you can kind of like go with it. And yeah, it's definitely a challenge to like connect with the reader when it's, you're not necessarily telling a long story, you know, you're not giving a character a story arc, or, you know, you only have maybe so many words to go on the page, but to add kind of that extra level, that extra element. Like, I love that you made that connection in between like that photography side of you and then with the fiction side of you. Like, that's so awesome. That's so fascinating.
Yeah. You know, I have some friends. Yeah, I have some friends who are like visual poets. So they are even more, you know, the poems are like, you know, there's materials, there's colors, there's drawing, yeah. And then there's the words. And we've been talking lately, and it has me thinking a lot, even if with poems that don't, they're very sort of straight up regular poems that are not doing anything weird with the layout. Just even the line break, which is my favorite thing ever, is the line break.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I know I'm a poet. even a basic line break is a nonverbal thing, right? That can be done visually, or some people make it the way they read it. So they pause. People vary with that. But it's a nonverbal thing that creates meaning. So I have a favorite example by a poet, Erica Sanchez. She has this line break that the first line is, "In my hand I hold a bird," and then she breaks. And the next one is, "Of paradise." So for me, it's almost like this bird of paradise, the flower. So I almost see a bird sort of transforming into the flower. Mm. She does that, you know. So that's just a very basic line break. But it's still playing with this other element, either visual or pause, to do this poet things. So yes. So some of them are more visible when they are very playing a lot with the layout, but even just a very simple plain poem has this tension there too, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, like making those decisions of where you decide to even make that line break. It's
right.
You know, it tells so much more. That's so cool. So like, you have friends that are poets, like do you guys have like a little, you know, I don't want to say support group, but you know, like a little circle where you kind of give each other feedback or piggyback off of each other and share insights or ideas and things like that?
I love that. I think support group is great. So I do, you know, now I moved to Chicago about 2 years ago, and it was right, like, I had some fun here, but it was right before the pandemic. So I don't have a new writing group here. I still have all my friends. And if we send each other stuff, you know, "What do you think of this? What do you think of that?" But right now I don't have like an organized thing, which I often do. So before I moved, I had a group of mother friends who write. Some of them are very professional writers. Some of mm-hmm. them just write for this thing. And that was a wonderful group because everybody would get perspectives of like writers, but also just a regular reader as well,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
Because there were different levels. That was really lovely and very important in writing this book. I had another writing group, but that was just for fiction in New York City. They were also very awesome. And we would do like a very long rotation, like maybe each time two people would bring their manuscript. So it would take you like 6 months to be up again. But that was good because you could work on it, you know?
Yeah.
And before that, in the MFA program, that was, you know, structured time. So I think having a support group, either for feedback or just for support, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so you're not writing for years and nobody's ready to listen to you. And I think just as important as feedback is somebody to go like, you know, keep going. It's great when you bring stuff. You know, I think that is very
right.
helpful. And I highly recommend to everybody, yeah, from professional people to people who just write for fun. I think it's really nice to find a group. You may first not get the right people for your work. You know,
sure.
If somebody hates mysteries, right, and you're writing mysteries, that's just not going to be fun
right.
for anybody.
Yeah.
You know, so it may take a little bit, but once you find the people, it's really nice. It's really important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm so sorry because I'm in Chicago too, and I've been here like all my life. And yeah. And I'm so sorry that you came here like right before like the world went on fire.
So you know, like, I lucked out because I had a few months first of all, warm weather and non-pandemic time, so that I could realize that I really love it here. So then during the pandemic, I was like, no, this is just everywhere. But
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. You're just kind of like, no, this isn't just, it's not just a Chicago thing. Right. Yeah, unfortunately. So then how did, you know, the pandemic influence or affect like your writing process or, you know, just as a way to cope or, you know, just confront your mental health, you know, like, yeah. Like how did that get you through the pandemic?
Yeah. So the first, I don't know if 3 or 4 months, it's hard to tell, but the very beginning when we were home, like the sudden closing, the first one, that was really tough. I was having a very hard time writing anything. I got 2 friends from New York City area and we tried to do something by email. It did not work. I could not write for a long time. So it was really hard. And I was worried about it. I was like, will I ever write again? And at the same time, I was dealing with this very intense situation with my son because he has this vision. This is all in my chapbook, Pleopia, but I'll just say it because it happened during the pandemic. I was working with him. You know, he has this vision condition, which is like called lazy eye, but it's amblyopia.
Oh, okay.
And because we shifted, like everything shut down, his therapies that he was doing, I had to do them with the instruction of the therapist. Very intense. And there's a lot there because I have this condition and I didn't know that all these things about myself were probably related to it. It was just a lot emotional time. I was just not in a good place, but getting by and very busy. But after this time, because the experience with my son was so intense, I started writing a lot, all of it at once. So I think my brain was doing something, you know, on the background. And it sort of came very fast, you know, like a lot. I was like, wow, where did it come from? So that was really good. After like, let's say probably about 4 months with nothing and I could not make myself write, a lot came at once. And then it was a lot of writing. And that really helped me because it was a container for everything that was happening. And it made me sort of understand it and parse it. And I'm very grateful to it. So very bad first beginning and then a very good period of writing. And now I'm very busy again, but with less fraught reasons. I'm talking to people more like we're talking, you know, because it's so closed down in the beginning. So it's very different. Now I'm not writing a lot like this past couple of months, just because I'm doing so many things for the book, you know, in preparation for it to come out. But because I had that experience, I feel much more relaxed about it. You know, I'm like, you know, it's okay.
Yeah.
You're gonna write again. So it kind of helps me. It helped me a little bit have that despair so I could remember it. So now when it comes again, I'm like, no, it's fine.
You know, it's gonna come back. Right. Well, yeah, it's, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. It's, you know, and you're not alone from the other authors I've spoken to about how they're coping during the pandemic or it's like, it's very similar across the board of where they find their way to cope or, you know, producing work helps. And, you know, immensely, it's just like, it's very similar to what you just told me where it takes a while to, because you're like, you don't have a choice. You're like, you know, you're just kind of stuck and not, you know, but everybody's kind of, we're all in the same situation. So it's like, why not make the best of it almost like, but you still kind of like, yeah, you got to get over it a little bit. You got to like sit with it. You got to let it marinate a little bit, let yourself get bummed out, let yourself, you know, struggle. And then because everybody copes differently and then you handle it, you take it from there. You know, also for, you know, you've published works before the pandemic happened and, you know, talking to authors who were releasing their debut right when everything shut down or in the middle, you know, because it takes months and months to prepare and edit and all that stuff. And you're so excited for this release date. And then the world gets flipped on its head and it's like not business as usual. Long way to say that, you know, you weren't alone in that. it was very similar across the board from a lot of people. I think no matter what industry, that's almost like very similar across the board too.
Right.
So I want to dig a little bit deeper here. This collection focuses on you confronting or like, you know, maybe segmenting your identities or finding a way to explore those, like the identity of you as an immigrant and then how becoming a mother. Both of those are agents of change. Like both of those are such huge, drastic life events that change a person's personality. Like I explain it to friends, like, you know, who are thinking about becoming parents. I'm like, it's just like a new level of you. Like if you're in a video game, it's like you're leveling up, or it's just like you know, you're finding new like parts of yourself. Yeah. You know, new levels to being human. So how did they, you know, play out in your life? Like what were the more significant things that you either discovered about yourself or about the process in general as you shifted from before you moved here, you weren't an immigrant, and then you came here and then you were an immigrant and then you lived here for a while and then you had your son. So then you became a mom. And so like how, let's like kind of like explore those like different stages and you know, how those agents of change like kind of shifted you and shifted what's it like to be in your world kind of thing, or how you had to confront that part, the new parts of your life.
Right. Oh my gosh, I love this question. I don't know what I'm gonna say. Let's see what's gonna come up. So first I'll just do a little bit of the mother and a little bit of the immigration and a little bit of them together, because as you said so nicely, like such big changes. The mother, I think people are different. And first of all, you know, people have different types of shifts that I won't have. That's just the
thing that
changed my life, right? But I love the level up. So I wasn't a person up to like close before I had my kid. I wasn't a person who had thought about children for a long time. You know, like I was thinking of other things. I don't know.
Yeah.
People are different about that. Right. I wasn't like, oh, when I have my kids or whatever. I was thinking of other things. I was thinking of moving. Maybe immigration is also part of that, because you're thinking of your paperwork and your applications and this and that. And that takes years, you know, so you think about that. And then I was thinking about finishing school, you know, like all the things that people think about.
Right.
And very soon before, like, we decided, yeah, let's have a kid, you know, it was a quick thing. I got, I don't know, whatever that feeling is. And it didn't take long. So it's not like I had a big, long transition, you know, into that mode. I had the 9 months and a little bit, which is significant, you know, but I also think that time, so much is happening. So you're thinking about yourself and the baby, but you also think about your body and all the little stages. So your mind is kind of occupied, right? Mm-hmm, so I didn't have like a lot of expectations of myself as a mother, but you know, once he came, and again, people are different about that, but you know, I had very immediate bonding and love and fear. It was all very new.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he was a difficult baby. He's a wonderful, very easy kid. You know, like now I'm like, this kid is so easy. But he was a difficult baby. So like for the first several few months and then the first year, but mostly the first 6 months or so, he had like, you know, colic, which was just like unexplained crying. And he would cry for hours and hours and hours and hours. And he would not sleep. And then he had reflux, which may be why he was crying. We don't know. But, you know, it was tough. So we were so depleted of sleep, exhausted for months and months. Like people ask, oh, what about labor or whatever? For me personally, it was fine. I mean, hurt or whatever, but it wasn't a big deal. But
this month, yeah. Oh, that thing, you know.
Oh, that thing, whatever, you know. The months of lack of sleep, that I remember, I'm like, oh my God, I cannot do that. That was like so traumatic. I just don't even know how I functioned. You know, like it was very, very basic survival. And there was for very, very many months. So I was a changed person after that experience. it was a very intense transition of that. It was all the feeling and all that feeling that we still have, you know, of worrying, of love, of always thinking about them. But also I was like, all right, this is serious. You know, so I was very, it was very different, very fast. Right. And the other thing, you know, I think that happens to a lot of people is just your, how you think of your parents may change, or how you think of your extended family or your history. Sure. You start thinking about that. Right. Right. So that was part of how it intersected with immigrating. So before I came to the US, I lived in Australia for 7 years.
Okay.
So I was there. I was like, maybe I'll stay here. And then I came here, you know, and I came and I was like, no, I'm, you know, I got married and I was like, okay, this is great. I'm here. But I felt much more apart from the country. I was more, even though I was living here and I was settled here, I was like, I don't know if I'll stay here or not, you know.
Yeah, sure.
It was
sure.
kind of like, yes, I live here, but it's not my place at all. It's, I'm just like an, you know, even though I had been here for years. But once he was born, you know, I was like, oh, all this history of the U.S. is his history now, you know.
And
it was kind of like I merged the country and the history went backwards and all kind of was more related to me now, right? And this is his home. Even if we, first of all, it's not as easy to go pack up and go somewhere else anymore. But even if we did, it would be always his home. So it really changed my experience of being here. It became much more serious and like, I'm a part of this. He's a part of this. All that stuff came with it. So yes, there were very big shifts. And they really sort of messed with each other a little bit.
Yeah. No, I love how that's such like a perspective that I had never thought about before, with families or like with, you know, because your son is a first generation and how, you know, I guess I never thought of like parents of first generations where they had to kind of, because you're kind of, you know, it's like, this isn't your home country, but you also still have to like acknowledge and respect and, you know, put that extra effort in for your son, because this is his, this is all he knows. His story is going to be different than yours for sure. I think there's a, one of your poems in particular, forgive me if I have the title correctly. I think it was Mother Tongue, where you said you had to like kind of do everything backwards, like how you initially would do it. And just with the date, it like so crazy how, you know, that's, it reminded me of like, oh yeah, like, cause in some countries they do the date, month, year instead of the month, date, year. And I was like, you know, and then tying that to 9/11, I'm like, oh my goodness. Like that, it just like kind of just opened up these little doors where I was like, I, you know, I was peeking in and I was like, oh, holy shit. Like it was just such a new way to like tell just such a significant detail about how you're navigating like this new part of your world, this new part of your life. And, you know, that was like probably just one of the poems that just stood out. And it's like, I haven't read any of your works before, but now I'm like, oh man, I want to go, you know, gotta go back and maybe read some of your stuff and like see, you know, just see what other doors are, I'm going to peek into and open and check out. But aside from that, so like also you integrate your native language, Portuguese, into a lot of your poetry. So like, how does like the language fit into, you know, inspiration? Like if you have to look at different parts of what inspires you, what inspires your work, like how does like the language and maybe code switching and stuff like that, like how does that, you know, kind of play into that process?
First of all, thank you so much for reading that poem so carefully. That is so lovely.
Oh, yeah.
So the language, the Portuguese, it's funny because the earlier poems had much less Portuguese. And I love that you use the word inspiration. I think poets always play with, I don't know, form or give challenges for themselves, because that's kind of how the brain gets inspired. So the theme of this collection, you know, sort of called for me to work with it. And I think once the collection started becoming a collection, you know, because the early poems, you write them as single poems and they're not part of anything yet. The Portuguese started coming. And what was so fun and inspiring about that was to really start playing and start this project of how can this become one poem? I want it to be one poem with the two languages. And there's a bunch of different aspects to it. One of it is in terms of the experience, because I have been living away from Brazil for so long, I haven't grown up here or anything. There's a lot of things that I miss, like that people are talking about, that I just don't know what they're talking about. Yeah. Like ads from when they were kids or shows. I'm like, I have no idea.
Right, yeah.
There's a lot that I miss. And I think that is common to immigrants or a lot of people who may be not part of a dominant culture and they didn't grow up with certain references. So, you know, so there's a lot that I miss. But when I go back, there's also a lot that I miss there and that people there miss about me because I've been away for so long. So I like that the poem is not fully accessible both to English speakers and to Portuguese speakers, and they kind of get it. And there's something, it's not like to make the reader suffer or anything. There's something, it's not like justice, it's not that. It's that for me, and I don't think that's has to be true of everybody, there's a little bit of a joy on not knowing everything. So I think there are doors for the imagination and for you to fill in the gaps and for you to look it up, you know. So my experience of not knowing everything is not always an experience of feeling left out. It's also an experience of joy sometimes, you know. So I think that is a fun thing for the reader to try. It's the same, you know, I don't know, watching subtitled movies or whatever. Things get used to, but like sometimes if you do it, it's kind of fun. Having said that, I'm a very tolerant reader for shenanigans on the page.
Okay.
So, you know, so when there's like experiments or experimental novel or something where they're trying something that is not super easy to understand, I enjoy it. And I enjoy it not because I understand everything and I'm so smart. I enjoy it because I like having that feeling of not understanding a little bit and sort of try to figure it out. So I like that. So that is kind of what I'm giving the reader there, that experience that is similar to my experience of being in the world. That's the experience side. The other part is that there's a lot of fun in trying to put them together. So one way that I really enjoy is to use repeating forms. So, you know, in poetry, there'll be like a repeating form, like a pantoon, which is a poem that will repeat lines in a certain configuration, you know, so this line is going to be also this line. So if you're a poet or a person who's into pantoons, you know where the repetition is supposed to be. So there I put a translation. So instead of repeating the line, I translate the line. So that means that it kind of gives you a door if you're into looking into the translation.
Yeah.
But then I also wanted to have fun. So I translate sometimes when I have time, I translate work because it's kind of fun from other poets, you know. But when you translate, you try to get it right. You try to get what they meant. I'm like, no. I'm not going to try to translate and get it right. I'm going to like go with all the problems. So translation sometimes has a problem, for example, if you have a word that has multiple meanings or shades of meanings, you translate with the main meaning, but you lose the other meanings, right? I don't know, bank, like Bank of America or the Bank of the River or something, you know, and the poet puts that word and they want those two meanings, but you're translating, you're like, ah, I have to choose.
Oh, okay.
You know, and figure out another way, you know.
Yeah.
But with my poems, I would just pick my favorite, you know. And like, when it was my poem, I just did the translation however I wanted. And whatever was a problem, I would just choose my favorite one, not like the most faithful one, you know. So putting the two languages together, it was a lot of formal fun. So a lot of the things that poets like to do with form and challenges, that's in those poems, I played a lot of those things, and it was really fun to do that. And one last thing about last for this question, sorry, thank you for all this answer, about the bilingual poems. Yeah, you know, my friends, the visual poets I was talking about, they do erasures, you know, those poems where they get a text and they make the poem by erasing parts of whatever the text is.
Okay.
To create a new poem. So sometimes they do that just with white space. I have a friend who literally uses white out on the text. So she may get a note. Her new poem made of those words. So when I look at the bilingual works, I think, oh, they're similar to erasures, because you know there's something there if you don't speak both languages, but you don't know what it is, you know? So it kind of has that similarity, that intersection with all this awesome erasure poetry that is happening right now. So these are some things about the bilingual poems. I get excited about them.
I love that. I love that, you know, one thing you stood out in your answer, that people who are bilingual or people who are just maybe not bilingual, but they've grown up in families that speak two languages, like maybe they don't they understand like a lot of it, but maybe they don't understand everything, and vice versa, like either in their native language or the second language that they're learning. I love that, you know, how kind of being part of two cultures or two different worlds, but not having your whole self in one or the other. And I love that you used the poetry, used the language and you know, the form to kind of offer that insight a little bit to the reader. Like I, you know, I'm just sitting here like, oh my God, it's so much more sophisticated than I thought. Like you are such a clever writer and you're very talented. And I am so glad that I had the opportunity, you know, to read your work. And like, seriously, I don't know, I guess I was never like super into poetry. I just like, I enjoy it if it presents itself to me, if I stumble across something, you know, like Motherland, for example, and I'm just so glad that I had the opportunity to read it. It was just fascinating. And now maybe I might have to go back now, like after this conversation, I might have to go back and reread some stuff to like see, like, you know, see what else I pick up on after the fact, you know, the second read through. But you know, we're closing up on our time here, and that, you know, that went by so quickly. Just, you know, before we wrap up, maybe do you have anything else that you're working on that are you preparing for any other future projects, future releases, stuff like that?
Yeah. And thank you so much. I just want to say that. Thank you for being such a generous reader.
And oh, of course.
Not always reading poetry and reading this. I love that. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, yes, I am, you know, the second poetry collection is sort of excited about it, because I think I moved from that single poems to, oh, this is the thing now that I'm working on. This transition is always a very lovely transition. But that's gonna take a long time. That's gonna take a while, you know, but it's fun to have that. The other thing I'm working on is a short story collection, and that is already pretty advanced, you know, like that I have a draft, I'm going to revise it. I think that is going to come eventually first, and then the second poetry collection second. So I'm working, okay. I always like working on fiction and poetry at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm working on.
Oh, awesome. I'm going to have to keep my eye out on it. Ananda Lima, thank you so much for taking the time. This was such an enjoyable conversation. I feel like I learned so much, not just about you, but about, you know, the process of poetry and how, just how much, like, I could tell how much fun you have with it, and you want your readers to have fun too. And I love that. So thank you so much for taking the time. Motherland comes out October 15th. You know, we'll, you know, congrats once again on another release, and we'll, you know, I'll have to keep an eye out for your other works that you're working on.
Thank you so much. This is really lovely.
All right. And thank you for listening to this Cantina Conversation. And as always, we'll encourage you to join us over at thenerdcantina.com/community to engage in conversations that are taking place over there, as well as to stay up to date on our next episodes and everything else that's going on over at the Nerd Cantina. And until next time, talk to you later, nerds.